The opinions and views expressed by the host and guest are not necessarily the views and opinions of the Blake Radio Network. Broadcasting to the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul.
Cyberspace is a place that only a human being locates, where there's so much information to take. Then you enter an entirely new phase. Once you get off the internet, become World Wide Web.
Welcome to the Cyberspace Sanctuary, a safe house for your mind. I'm your host and facilitator, Junius Ricardo Stanton, inviting you to stay tuned for interesting interviews, news you can use, and programming designed with you in mind. Free your mind, the rest will follow, right here on the Cyberspace Sanctuary on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Lord.
Cyberspace is the place. Cyberspace is the place.
We're living in fear.
Welcome to the Cyberspace Sanctuary, a safe house for your mind, on the Blake Radio Network's Rainbow Soul. My name is Junius Ricardo Stanton. We thank you for logging on. We thank you for your support, and we thank you for carrying us with you on your personal mobile devices. We started off the program with a message in the music from Desiree, Strengthen Your Mind. And her song sets the stage for our guest, Jarrett L. Carter Sr., who's the founding editor of HBCU Digest. He's also the founder of HBCU Radio and the Center for HBCU Media Advocacy. We'll speak to him about all of those things, plus much, much more, following these messages. So don't go anywhere. Stay right where you are. We'd like to welcome everybody checking in from Real Media Player, from Windows Media Player, from iTunes. We want to encourage everyone to log into our website, which is blakeradio.com, and become familiar with how you can access our broadcast directly from our website. And vice versa, those of you who check in directly from the Blake Radio Network, become familiar with how you can also access us through Real Media Player, through Windows Media Player, and iTunes by logging into their radio tuner guides and doing a search for us in the talk radio genre. You're listening to Rainbow Soul, talk radio at its best.
Broadcasting to the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul.
Hi, I'm Junius Ricardo Stanton, inviting you to join me in financially supporting the Blake Radio Network on a regular basis. We need your continuing patronage to help the Blake Radio Network remain alive and thriving both now and well into the future. There are several easy ways you can send your contribution. To use PayPal, click on the help link on the Blake Radio Network's website at www.blakeradio.com, or you can go directly to the PayPal website and click the send money link. Type in rainbowsoul@blakeradio.com as the email address and Unlimited Ventures as the payee. Then follow the instructions. To send a check or money order, make it out to Unlimited Ventures, care of Neil Blake, and mail it to 73 Ireland Place, that's Ireland Place, Suite 109, Amityville, Amityville, New York, 11701. It's easy, painless, and uncomplicated. And you'll feel great after doing it, knowing you're keeping the Blake Radio Network alive and on the cutting edge of media technology. I'm Junius Ricardo Stanton, thanking you in advance for your support.
Gracious Professor Griff, you're listening to Junius Ricardo Stanton. Straight up, we're teaching you all those things you need to know from the neck up, all right? We're definitely doing a checkup from the neck up. This is Professor Griffin, Public Enemy, the ex-minister. I'm out. Peace.
Our guest is Jarrett L. Carter, Sr., the founding editor of HBCU Digest, and he's also the founder of the Center for HBCU Media Advocacy. It's a pleasure to welcome him to the program. Welcome, brother. How are you?
Thank you, bro. I appreciate you having me on today.
Well, it's my pleasure. Actually, I want to publicly commend you for the recent HBCU Media Summit. My wife and I attended, and we were thoroughly impressed, and we're still on a high from it. And so you're to be commended. I mean, it was really a great, energetic, and upbeat event.
Well, thank you. First, thank you for coming. You know, you're the first ranking alumni official we've been able to host with that event, and you and Mrs. Stan were really, really great there, provided really great feedback, and I'm glad you got an opportunity to see firsthand, you know, what we're trying to do in the way of networking and strategy building among communication officials and executives at Black colleges.
Well, to start off the program, share some of your personal history. I know you're a graduate of the illustrious Morgan State University, but share some of your other personal background.
I'm a Maryland native. Grew up in Prince George's County, right outside of Washington, D.C., went to Morgan, straight out of high school, was a journalism major. And at the time of coming out, one of the things that really kind of dissuaded me from going feet first into journalism was you couldn't make any money. I think my first job offer out of college was at a paper in Saginaw, Michigan, and they were paying like $22,000 a year. So I said, you know, that's not going to work. and I didn't, you know, get right out of college being naive. I didn't get to write for the Washington Post or anything like that. So I was able to kind of jump around and take a number of jobs in public relations and journalism and never really lost the bug for it, for writing, that is. And then 2007, launched a blog covering HBCU sports. I'm a huge sports fan. And at the time just saw there was a lot of work being done in HBCU sports, particularly by OnlyDan.com and TSPNSports.com. But, you know, being an energetic young guy, I thought, you know, maybe I can add to the dialogue about black college sports. And after several years of doing that successfully, literally just had an aha moment where it's like, well, if you can do that for sports, you can do that for news coverage. Because certainly there's a disparity of balanced news coverage, period, for HBCUs. So in 2010, I reformed the sports blog into the HBCU Digest with a goal of just making the little bit of coverage that was out there of black colleges more readily available and accessible, and then making sure that a lot of the institutions that were publishing news about, you know, research and economic and community development had a place for that to land. And initially it was a place where you could find all of these kind of items aggregated. But then I found that even with a day job, it was easy to start developing original content as well. So we kind of broadened the scope of reporting and trying to tell original stories, and we grew into breaking news. And you know, over 4 years, we've been extremely blessed to have it grow into an outlet that people depend on. And most surprisingly, that reporters from a wide range of national and regional outlets see as a resource. And we've been lucky that our information and our site and our publications have been appealing to seasoned alumni and students. And I kind of credit that to the hard work we put in on social media. So we do a lot of work and a lot of cross-promotion on Twitter and Facebook. And obviously you would know that those have two very different audiences. But because of that, I feel like we've been able to expose a lot of students to information and commentary about black colleges they otherwise may not have gotten. And that's been able to take a lot of the passion for young people and turn that into real advocacy and a yearning for more information about what makes HBCU so unique. And what kind of separates them from the, you know, the typical negative narrative you may see in some more mainstream outlets. And I feel like alumni have gotten a better grasp of understanding a broad picture of HBCUs. A lot of times we think in terms of where we graduated from or where we go or the HBCU that's nearest to us, but we don't often have a holistic view of the culture. And I think that the Digest has been able to make a good place in helping people along and developing that appreciation and understanding of the culture and understanding their role within it.
Well, starting a blog is fairly inexpensive, but going to a hard copy publication as well as an online digital version costs money. So how'd you get your startup capital?
Man, my money. I have never had a major sponsor. Well, let me put it this way: a major sponsor in the way that we think about Coca-Cola and Microsoft and all those kind of companies. But I've been very, very fortunate that a lot of black college presidents have been major sponsors of the Digest. So I do have major sponsors in the way of our institutions. And the very first sponsor I ever had was Bowie State University in Maryland. And I'll never forget the sister Tammy Thomas, who at the time
was the PR director.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. At the time was the PR director at Bowie. And, you know, I called her and I said, you know, I got this website that covers black colleges and, I want it to grow. And I think that if you advertise, I know it'll pay off big. A lot of people will see your branding, and this will be relatively inexpensive for a national advertising campaign. What you would pay me would be 10% of what you would pay to get in the Washington Post one time. And Tammy, who's an Alabama State alumna, she said, don't say anymore. Tell me where to send a check. Because I believe in supporting our own. And after that, I had schools like Tennessee State and Hampton and Florida A&M, Fayetteville State. And now we have about 16 HBCU partners.
Oh, that's good.
That advertise annually. And it really benefits because, again, HBCUs don't have a really robust marketing budget where they can buy TV time during the Super Bowl, or they could get on, CNN.com and HuffingtonPost.com. It just costs too much to do that. And so to have a publication that reaches the audience you want to reach, and that's namely Black College alumni and students who are very actively recruiting friends and siblings to these schools, it's gone very well, and the schools have really taken care of me. And my ultimate goal is to, at a minimum, get all the four-year institutions buying in as advertisers for the Digest, and I really think you'll see if that can happen, we'll have a really expansive effort. We'll be able to hire a lot of writers and editors and ad salespeople, and I think it'll really be a model of Black folks building a business that works for us and is managed by us and has our best interests at heart. Now, do I think that's going to happen? I doubt it, because sometimes in the media business, you have to tell the truth. And sometimes truth-telling isn't always profitable. But I do hope that people see from the Digest a real interest in being responsible and trying to play it down the middle and reporting the good and the bad. And fortunately, I've never had a school that has a relationship with us in terms of funding or advertising say, I'm going to pull it back because of a negative story. I've been grateful for that because I think that they get that I really care. And I'm not out to do anybody in. And I'm not out to make people look bad. I'm just out to tell the story and to chronicle what's going on with HBCUs and to be that singular and consistent voice in the challenges that we face and the successes that we make.
Then from there you branched off, you did HBCU radio. So what's that?
Oh, man, it started as a live radio broadcast we did every Thursday, and I was doing that through the Blog Talk Radio Network. And it really, really was successful. We had, thousands of people listening. We had, brothers and sisters who were serving overseas listening and emailing saying, this is a great way to keep up with my school. Thank you so much. And the cost just got to be too much. So now we've kind of scaled it back to a podcast edition, which is a little bit cheaper. But we hope to go back to the live format because I think that there's something so powerful about having guests on live and having, students and alumni call in live and give their feedback on some really pertinent issues. So that was just one way that we tried to broaden our multimedia approach to covering Black colleges and being able to get a chance to hear the actual voice of some presidents and the actual voice of some students who were doing really positive things. And we're going to continue that with the podcast. We this year launched our print publication, which, to be honest, I did not want to do. I did not want to go into a really costly magazine. But one thing I learned is you got to give your audience what they want, and presidents of HBCUs and executives, they still like to have something in hand when it comes to getting information. They still enjoy that, and it's been a positive step over the first 6 months. We're going to see if we make it the next six. But they still like to have something in hand, and that's a great, tradition in our community when you think back about, Crisis Magazine and Ebony and Jet. That's a really strong tradition in the Black community in terms of news and information. So reticently, I did do that, and so far it's been okay. We're above water, but again, to everybody out there listening, it always helps if you can if you can support a brother, take an ad out, because that's the way we can keep it going and make sure that brothers and sisters who freelance write for us can get paid a decent wage for the hard work that they put in. And so that's, kind of the complement of what we offer. We're online, we're in print, and we're in broadcast, and we hope to, someday take that to a YouTube channel where
mm-hmm.
we can do some
yeah.
broadcast
yeah.
work there.
I was going to ask you about that, and
yeah.
even not necessarily YouTube, but just from your website, streaming, material from your website.
Yeah, I mean, we want to be a comprehensive media outlet, and we want to be 100% black-owned. I don't want to get into a situation where I got to co-op with, the Huffington Post or, co-op with, some other majority news outlet, because then you find that most of the content is going to have to match
mm-hmm.
what they think
yep.
HBCU folks want to read, and that's controversy and marching bands and football, and we're so much more than that. So, with the support of you guys, I think that it's going to get there, and I think that, in a very short time, that's going to happen, because there's so much positive feedback that we get every single day. And when we do things like the summit and the awards, people become so engaged with what we're doing, and they figure out, we're being very serious and intentional about trying to do something to support these schools. And it's just been a blessing, because the more people that see it and get to experience it firsthand, whether it's an event or reading the site or reading the magazine or hearing a podcast, they say, they go back to their school and say, how can we build this brother up? So God has been really good, because we've kind of built this thing through word of mouth and community, and that's the black tradition. And I'm glad that we've been able to do it that way. And I'm glad that, we can, set our own terms for what our message is. I don't have to be beholden to what Coca-Cola thinks. I don't have to be beholden to what Walmart or Ford or State Farm thinks. I can talk to my audience and my people the way I want to, and I wouldn't have it any other way if I can help it.
Mm-hmm. How can people contact you regarding ads as well as subscriptions or other questions they might have about your future plans as well as what's going on currently?
Oh, man, if you go to hbcudigest.com, we have a contact form there. You can call me. Our direct line is 443-242-HBCU-4228. 443-242.
All right, slow down. Now, you're in radio. You know better. Slow down.
The number for us is 443-242-HBCU.
All right, give that again. Give that again.
443-242-4228.
And just to be clear, give the URL for the site.
Sure. It's www.hbcudigest.com.
Okay.
And you can follow us on Twitter, on Facebook, Google+, Instagram. We syndicate all of our content through all of our social media channels. So whether you're at work and you like to get your information through Facebook or Twitter, or you like to go to sites directly, you'll be able to keep up with what's going on with HBCU every day.
All right, perfect. Now, you also founded the Center for HBCU Media Advocacy. Now, what is that exactly, and how does it work, and what was the genesis behind that?
So the goal was to try to figure out a way to raise money to support PR and communications departments at HBCUs, and to support student media at black colleges. Because if we just mentioned earlier, a lot of black colleges don't have big marketing budgets, and they don't have, the newest or most innovative technology to try to reach alumni or to conduct, media outreach in a really positive way. So we just wanted to start something up where people could give and support an effort to bolster media development at black colleges and have it be tax deductible. And the center has kind of overseen the management of the HBCU Awards selection process over the last 4 years. And while we haven't grossed a lot of money there, one thing that we are going to be doing this fall, and I'm happy to announce it with you, is to make available to black college online newspapers who are interested in redesigning their site, buy-in to hundreds and hundreds of themes, those that run on WordPress, you'll be able to redesign your site with a number of themes that we're going to buy licensing for, or have an enterprise license for, and schools that want a new look for their student newspaper, they'll be able to do that. Now the goal for that is to, one, try to save costs. A lot of student newspapers are shifting from a paper version to a digital version. But we know that with young people trying to get information, they want to be able to look at a nice looking site. And so we're going to help, those HBCUs that are interested and those student newspapers that are interested, have a new look for their site. Hopefully that will be able to attract more readers, and hopefully it'll be able to attract more advertising with those publications as well.
Now, will you do a RSS type feed, centered around HBCU content and information, because a lot of their staffs are smaller too, and they're just primarily focused on their own particular school. So will you be able to augment what they're doing?
Well, the goal is, that's what we try to do with the digest, and it's a tough proposition because, again, not every office functions in the way that some of the better or bigger schools do. So the way that you find information out about FAMU would be totally different than if you were looking at Lemoyne Owen in Memphis. And the way that Cheney sends out information, it's a lot different from what you would find in Lincoln or even, Delaware State. So, what we're trying to get is a way for all of the HBCUs to know that we're here, and that we're interested in pushing their content and telling unique stories in a very dynamic way. And we're trying to reach out to the communication pros and let them know what is a good story. It's not enough to say that, we're going to have, the sock hop on Friday night, or, that this is the faculty senate is coming up. That's important to your campus, but it's not something that's going to make the average alumnus or the casual HBCU observer say, well, hey, I want to know more about that school. So we're trying to convince the PR folks that you gotta tell good stories. You gotta tell things that you think could be on 60 Minutes or USA Today. Even if it's close to your campus, put a spin on it so that people who are casual and hardcore HBCU supporters alike want to take interest in it and learn more about what your school is doing.
Now, the recent summit, which just took place last week, it was at Dillard University, and what I liked about it was that you focused on solutions and best practices. So what are some things that and strategies and tactics that various HBCUs can use to address the critical issues that they're facing, such as enrollment, fundraising and finance, and more importantly, how do you galvanize alumni to give back? Because that if our alumni do that, then that's half the battle.
One of the things that I think is really good that HBCUs are starting to do is using multimedia to tell their story, because you get to see these young people and just how brilliant and how committed they are to their institution. So you look at schools like North Carolina Central, you look at schools like FAMU, North Carolina A&T, you see a lot of dynamic content coming out, and you can hear directly from faculty and students, and you can see the diversity in action. And what it means to, how much it means to that school. Another thing that I think is positive is that a lot more folks are using social media to kind of galvanize support around their institutions. And I mentioned this at the summit. There's no such thing as a small newspaper anymore. There's no such thing as a little black newspaper anymore, a little black TV station. Because with social media, if you got an audience, every audience member you have has an audience of their own. So everybody listening to this podcast, or everybody listening to this broadcast, has 100, 200, 300, 400, 500 people that follow them on Facebook. And so they, therefore, are media outlets unto themselves. And so there's no such thing anymore as small audiences or small, following of black media and black news media. Because we all have our own individual networks by way of social media. So if everybody every day commits to sharing one or a few pieces of information about their institution or other black colleges, you're talking about thousands of people nationwide that are going to be getting that information. And it's so critical. It doesn't cost you anything to share, you know, something on Facebook or to retweet something. It's free. But you're doing such a tremendous service for the Digest. You're doing such a tremendous service for your show when you share that content. Because when you share it, you're telling your network, I approve this message. And if you approve it, chances are they'll approve it. Mm-hmm. And their following mm-hmm. will take it. And mm-hmm. their following will take it. So this is how things go viral. And so I think that the more that we share positive content about these schools, the more people are going to see, hey, there are a lot more than what we're hearing in the news. There are a lot more than what we're hearing on the local news. When people say we're not giving back, well, you know, the Digest is reporting this, and, you know, Cheney is reporting that. I mean, I didn't know that. That's one of the most powerful statements about HBCUs that can come out today in 2014. I didn't know they were doing that. Because that's a turning point for when people become emotionally invested. And if you're emotionally invested, after a while, you're going to become financially invested.
Mm-hmm. Our guest is Jarrett L. Carter, Sr. He's the founding editor of HBCU Digest. How can people submit content, ideas, pictures, videos, and media support in general?
Call me. Let me know. You can email me directly. My email address is Carter, C-A-R-T-E-R, at HBCUDigest.com. And literally, some of the best stories I've ever received, have come from people just, you know, filling out the contact box. To give you the most recent example, I had a sister from Shreveport email me about her husband, who was an engineer, a career engineer, came out of a tough upbringing in Shreveport, went to school, became an engineer, was very successful, and just decided one day, I want to be a lawyer, and went to Southern Law School and graduated summa cum laude from the law school. So this brother, I mean, went from an engineer to an attorney, or, you know, and not a lot of people do that.
Right.
Not a lot of people
right.
have that kind of work ethic. And not a lot of people believe that they can even do that. And we wrote that story up. I also write for the Huntington Post. I exclusively write HBCU content there. And I posted that on the Digest on the Huntington Post. And it was one of those stories that really got a lot of attention, because you don't typically hear that. And you specifically don't hear that about our black men. You know, that kind of work ethic, and this brother is married and has, you know, a child.
Family already,
Living a good life. I mean, and that's the kind of stories that we want out there. You know, and people are yearning for that kind of content. They want to see it, and they want to share it, and they want to support it. And now I hope I got a call from the Southern Law Center. You know, people are contacting them left and right about this story. So when we talk about giving back, there's a lot of ways that we can do it, and I tell young people this all the time. You know, maybe you don't have the means to write $1,000 or $5,000 check. I don't, and I'm a working man, and I think I make good money. But what I can do is write a $100, $200, $300 check, and what I also can do is make sure my siblings attend a black college, because I was the first. I was the oldest in my family. And so I was the role model that, you know, was always in my little sister and little brother's ear. You want to go to an HBCU? And fortunately for me, my sister went to Delaware State for a bachelor's, went to Bowie State for a master's, and went to Morgan for a doctorate. My brother got his degree from Morgan in business. So, you know, by my count, I didn't write a check for either one of them. But by my count, in terms of tuition, I done paid out to, three HBCUs?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
More than $200,000, at least, because I helped you get tuition that way. So giving back is being able to positively promote the HBCU experience, because we know enrollment is a problem. So if we're sending our kids to these schools, we're helping. We're helping to support with enrollment. You know, we're helping to support that endowment. We're helping to support that athletic, you know, those athletic fees that help to build strong programs. So I've given a lot. I hope that I've given a lot through, you know, what we do with the Digest and what we do with the Summit and the Awards. I was so encouraged yesterday to see Hampton University, our 2014 HBCU year, getting so much coverage locally and nationally for winning the award.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a call from, you know, their PR director and their president, Dr. Harvey, who I admired greatly. I think he's the greatest president we've ever had. And he's saying, I got people calling me for college tours. They just heard about this award. And I got alumni calling like, you know, I'm going to give back. I'm so proud of you. I didn't know you were doing all these things. So this is, you know, this is me trying to use, you know, what God has kind of put on my heart to do with my life to try to give back. And I think it's working. I hope it's working. And I hope more people can use, you know, what God has given them to do the same thing.
Well, obviously it's working because you have carved a niche as a spokesperson. You shared the fact that you write for the Huffington Post. Many people might recognize your name on the series that's running on MSNBC about HBCUs because they have tapped you as a resource person. And so you're getting credibility, you're getting a name out there, you're doing the great work. And I guess the theme for me for the conference, even though it was about strategies and it was called Countering the Narrative.
Countering the Crisis,
And that basically is our challenge, to counter the negative narrative and the insidious question about, are HBCUs relevant, are they effective, are they economical, all those questions. And I think what you're doing, and you're probably one of the few vehicles that is out there doing it, is to counter that narrative, and you're answering the questions because people can see what's going on. And much of what you report, much of what the content on your site is about and in the magazine is not being reported in the corporate media.
You know, for everybody who says HBCU is relevant, I've never heard something that's so quote-unquote irrelevant get so much attention. You know what I mean? Like, if I'm thinking about, if you're having a conversation about boxing, you know, Riddick Bowe is irrelevant in 2014 because he's not fighting.
Right.
You know, I mean, that's not to say he's irrelevant in history. But in 2014, he's irrelevant because he's not fighting. Well, HBCUs are still in the business of educating people. It's not like we stopped. It's not like they all closed all of a sudden. It's not like they stopped doing research. It's not like they stopped giving people opportunity. It's not like we're still, you know, we're still advancing the black middle class. We are still the most powerful engine of black political power, of black economic power, and black research there is on planet Earth. On planet Earth, HBCUs are only here in America. I mean, there's a few that have tried to copy it in Brazil and places like Africa, where African nations, I should say, where some countries have tried to create systems of higher education for people who have been oppressed. But this is an all-American idea that started out of racism.
Mm-hmm.
And that because of the tenacity of our people, we turned it from schools that trained teachers, preachers, and farmers into schools that created chemists and astronauts and CEOs. I mean, so only in America. I mean, in America may think that the time is coming gone, but we need them now more than ever. Because if you have an HBCU closed, and I don't care where it is, first of all, you've already denied hundreds of thousands of students an opportunity at higher education. And those hundreds of thousands of students are either going to do one or two things. They're not going to go to a larger school because this larger schools, by and large, won't let us in. Even when we're qualified, they only let a few of us in. So all those brothers that can't go to college, they're going to be coming in your back door. And that's, you know, that's putting it frankly, but that's what's going to happen. You're going to have a generation of people who are so desperate and so limited in opportunities, they're going to make them in a negative way. And you're going to have to, as a taxpayer, invest in growth of the penal system and the penitentiary. You're going to have to do that because what you don't put in education, you're going to have to put in to the penal system. You're going to have to put in the social programs. because people without education are going to become more reliant on these systems to survive. So, you know, America has to make a choice. You can keep saying we don't need HBCUs, then you're going to need more police, and you're going to need more social workers, and you're going to need more government assistance if you take them out. So
yeah,
it's cheaper to educate them.
Well,
you know, that's the first thing. And then the second part of it is these black colleges are some of the largest employees of African-American workers. So when you take them out, you're not only taking them taking away opportunity for students, you're taking away jobs for black people. And I don't think our people really get that. Like, you know, you make fun of an HBCU or you criticize it. That's where black folks work. So what are you saying? Are you saying it's better for black folks, a lot of black folks in a given city, not to have a job? And it's better for them not to have opportunities to feed a family or to become a success because the technology and the funding hasn't been right for the school and therefore the services haven't been great, or you haven't had the most technology available? So you're talking about way more than just, you know, what's a relevant education. And I don't think our people have really digested that fact. You can take them away, and you are literally going to see communities die.
Well, there
you're going to see black communities die.
Well, there are people who subscribe to that and saying that it's deliberate. Now, for an example, we're attempting to get the state to up the ante and treat Cheney in an equitable way. But they just spent $200 million on one new prison in an adjacent county, in Montgomery County. You know, Cheney straddles Chester and Delaware County. Well, in an adjacent county, Montgomery County, they just spent money for Gratisford. And at one point, before they made the decision to tear it down, they were going to pay $5 million just to let it stay fallow, just to stay there and keep it. And they balk at putting that type of money, $5 million in the chain. I mean, it's insane, really. It's insidious and it's criminal.
Yeah. I mean, and that's why the HBCU is so important, because how are legislative funding decisions made? By state senators and delegates. And so where are the black legislators coming from? Where did they get their education from? Black colleges. And when they are elected and when they are lobbying for more support for HBCUs, that's why. So people don't see how a lot of our success as a people starts and ends with HBCUs. You don't have an Elijah Cummings, a Marsha Fudge, and a lot of those people in Congress without black colleges. You don't have it. You just don't. I mean, because at the time when they were coming of age as students, HBCUs were the only place
they
could go.
Right, right. If they're a certain age.
And we keep resting on that fact, like, well, we don't have to do that anymore. And I get it. There's a lot of resentment from, you know, some of our seasoned brothers and sisters that they went to a school that they had to go to. There was no choice. And there was this narrative painted around like somebody was holding something back from you at the white schools. And they've raised their children under that narrative, like you don't have to be boxed in, you can go wherever you want to go. But what I hope our brothers and sisters who didn't go to HBCUs understand is that everybody can't pull themselves up by their bootstraps when they didn't have straps to pull or they didn't own boots. And what we have with HBCUs is institutions that are willing to give you the boots and show you how to strap them.
And there was a time they would show you how to make them.
See what I'm saying?
Yeah,
and that's
yeah.
not what you're going to get at other larger schools. What you are going to get at white colleges, or predominantly white colleges, is racial ostracizing because people don't want you there. You're not going to get the right mentoring, because even if you do encounter black faculty, chances are all the black students at that one school are clamoring to get with that one or two or that handful of black faculty because there's nobody else that understands them. So what you wind up doing as a black student at a predominantly white college, in a lot of cases, not every, but in a lot of cases, is creating an HBCU experience at a white school.
Yeah, and then they challenge,
you join a black fraternity or sorority.
Yeah, but then they criticize them for that. You know, why are you all sitting together? Why do you want to have a black student union? Why do you want to have a black student league? All that kind of stuff.
Right. I mean, you know, we're going to – I'm just hopeful that, you know, we can finally find a place where we can offer a new narrative on those things. And social media, a lot of black reporters and journalists are doing a great job of advancing that. It's a little slow going because we got to deprogram ourselves, but it's working, and we just got to keep at it.
Now, I know that you wanted – that was your passion, that sports was your passion, but you wanted to get away and get into the broader context of HBCUs. But do you get support from the various HBCU athletic conferences like the MEAC, SWAC, CIAA? Has the light gone on in their commissioners' heads and said, hey, wait a minute, we can use this to help promote what we're doing, especially the lower tiered schools? I'm not talking about the Bayou Classic that you had at the conference or the Magic City Classic. I'm talking about some of the lower tiered programs.
You know, Mr. Van, it's the most interesting thing. No, to answer your question, the answer is no. And I don't think that's some effort to box the Digest out or anything like that. I just think that they don't. Sports has never, for the last 40 years or so, hasn't embraced the black media as an outlet. And that's just a cultural thing. But I will say this. One of the interesting things about HBCU athletics, they are so powerful in the sense that they can attract huge sponsorships, or relatively huge sponsorships. State Farm will pay hundreds of thousands to thousands of dollars to be branded at the Magic City Classic in Birmingham. And that stadium that they're in, can seat about 74,000 people. That many people read my site in a week, on any given week.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's weird in the sense that I'm not to take anything away from the Magic City Classic, and not to take anything away from State Farm or Ford or Coca-Cola or anybody who's buying into their sponsorships, because they're trying to sell cars and drinks like everybody else, and we buying them. But the funny thing is, you would pay to be on site for one day to be in front of 74,000 affluent African-American people, when the same amount of people are on my site and in my magazine every week, four times a month. So, I mean, it goes to show you what sponsors think about us. It goes to show you what Coca-Cola and Ford and State Farm and McDonald's and all those companies think about us. They think that the only thing we take seriously is football, Battle of the Bands.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the things that they want to be in front of, because they think that that's the only time of year we think about HBCUs.
And it's non-cerebral. I mean, they don't, if you look at, except for a very select few, if you look at the major marketing done about black people, very rarely are we depicted as serious. Very rarely are we depicted as scientists, doctors, teachers. You know, it's always entertainment and athletics.
Right.
And that's on a good day,
That's right. That's what they think about us. Yeah. I mean, So part of what we have to do is re-engineer the way that we are depicted. And we do that by the products we consume and the things that we support. So, I mean, you guys really don't understand. Every time y'all share something, everyone that shares an article on the Digest is making the case to big companies and little companies that our people want serious content, and we are willing to support those products that support our goal of having serious content and serious conversations about what really matters to us.
I was impressed by the recent media summit. Number one, because my wife and I were probably the oldest people there. I would imagine, just looking around. But you talked about solutions. But I just a question, and it seemed like you were ripping and running, and you did it very with aplomb and confidence. So what does it take to put something like that on? In addition,
a lot of prayer, right. A lot of prayer, and a lot of really supportive people. Like I mentioned, I wouldn't have any of that without the support of all the HBCUs that advertise with me. And the more support we get, the bigger we can make it. A brother named Nick Perkins, who was a graduate of Fayetteville State University, he owns a food service company, Perkins Management Services, Inc. I wouldn't have the Digest without him. He was one of the earliest people to sponsor the summit and the awards. And he's my age. We're both in our 30s. And he's a multi-million-dollar company owner. What it takes, I find, Mr. Stanton, is that black folks just got to look at other black folks doing something positive and say, I don't care what it takes, I'm going to give you something.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't matter what it is, because it's you. And that's what I've been fortunate to find, people that just say, we needed this, so tell me where to send a check. And I kind of liken it to, Spike Lee 20-some years ago when he was really in his heyday with his films. People knew that he was telling a story that needed to be told, so they didn't hesitate to make sure that story got out. Now, what we didn't do and what we should have done was made sure that Spike had his own studio. We financed the film. We didn't finance the studio. Mm. And now, who has the studio? Tyler Perry. And how did he get that? Running around with a dress and a gun. So, it just goes to show you, we have to start becoming believers in our institutions, not just our projects, not just our individuals. We have to believe in institutions, because institutions make the people, and they are the incubators for the ideas that can set our agenda and set us on a new path. You can't be people investing in Jared Carter or Lakita Carter, my wife. It has to be people investing in the HBCU Digest, because one of these days I'm not going to be here. And if I don't get the kind of resources to make sure that there's another person to come behind me, it's going to die with me. I don't know if my two sons will want to take it from me,
mm-hmm.
but it can't mm-hmm. be one of those things. We got to be a people that believes in continuing institutions, not just people. So I got to make sure that there's a model for that to keep going. And I have to think about it now in my 30s, because 30 years from now, I'll still be doing it. But I have to think about, me and my wife got to go on cruises. My wife is putting a lot now, and mm-hmm. I'm going to order, mm-hmm. In 20, 30 years, a lot. So I got to make sure that it can run on its own. And if I'm not here, or when I'm not here, that it will go on. And that's not a burden I want to put on my wife or my two boys. So it has to be built up in such a way that it manages itself and it continues to grow by itself. And it's just a matter of my family or myself being able to plug in the right kind of people with the right kind of vision going forward.
Our guest is Jared L. Carter, Sr. He's the founding editor of HBCU Digest, HBCU Radio, and also the Center for HBCU Media Advocacy. Before we let you go, give us your contact information, how people can engage you in terms of advertising, content, and any other pertinent information. Then I have one more question I want to ask you before I let you go.
Sure. You can email me at Carter, C-A-R-T-E-R, at HBCUdigest.com. Our telephone number is 443-242-4228, 443-242-4228. And you can find us on HBCUdigest.com. We're also on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and Google+. You can also contact our editor, Autumn Arnett, who's a really dynamic editor. She's on Twitter as well, A2 Arnett. You can email her at arnett@hbcudigest.com.
All right. Now, given the implosion that's going on in urban America, as well as rural America around the country, in terms of the problems, the financial problems, the scandals, and HBCUs are going to draw if we are to survive, we're going to draw our students from these pockets. What, as a young person, as somebody who's on top of all these issues, I mean, I was impressed by your knowledge of just you were clicking off things about HBCUs at the conference. How do you see HBCUs handling that situation, and what impact will it have on our survival?
It's going to be tough because you got so many young people coming out of such terrible experiences. And I'm not just talking about single-parent homes. I'm talking about situations of neglect, abuse, rape. I mean, we have students that are coming out mentally damaged. And you see it when it comes to things that happen on the campuses.
Right, right.
Black and white.
Mm-hmm.
So this isn't, this isn't just a black problem. It's worse for us, but it's an American problem. It's a global problem. But I think that what HBCUs have going for them is because they are by nature nurturing environments, that a lot of these students are going to be able to find somebody, whether it's a classmate, a professor, a groundkeeper, a housekeeper, somebody on that campus is going to click with them and let them know that they are amongst family. And what we have to do is continue to build that family atmosphere. We can't get so wrapped up in trying to compete with larger white schools and thinking that that's the way that the business of college and higher education is done. No, the business of black higher education is making sure that black people know that there's a place for us where we can be successful and be successful unto ourselves, that we don't have to be conditioned to think that the only way that you can be a success is if you're working, for a large corporation that your people don't own, or that you're voting for a candidate that doesn't look like you or have your interests at heart, or that you live in a town that's nothing like where you grew up. If we can reintroduce the concept of family, and everybody talks about that with HBCUs, we're a family, we're a family, we're a family. Well, family wouldn't let family members not go to an HBCU. Family wouldn't let a school close. That's not what family would do. We wouldn't let our aunt lose her house. We wouldn't let our grandmother go hungry or go without her heat on. And so for HBCUs to be the mother of what we know today as the African-American experience, we shouldn't let her go hungry. We shouldn't let her go become homeless. We shouldn't let her heat not be taken care of. So we have to really get back to sense of family and look at the institution as the mother of all that we have as a people in the way of education and political influence and economic opportunity, and treat her that way and treat all of them that way. You can't, there's no way in the world Cheney should be on hard time.
Hey,
no way in the world. You
tell
can't
me
have
about
the first, the first of them all having a hard time. That doesn't even make sense. Nobody would let that happen to Yale or Harvard. And that's how we got to think about Cheney. Now, we think about Howard that way because, Howard has had over the years that political support from Congress and that funding. And it has the number of graduates that people can easily recognize. But we have to look at the Cheneys and the Fisks and the the Bowie State,
Elizabeth City,
and the Wilberforces,
these are
history making institutions, and the Lincolns, and the Claflins. I mean, it's one thing for your bigger institutions to get a lot of love, and they should. They've been very great at having great leaders to come in and do a good work over a number of years. And Morehouse and Spelman, those are the ones we know. But there's nothing that separates Cheney from Morehouse. There's no difference. Other than that, one is public and one is private. But the bottom line is Cheney has done for Pennsylvania and done for that region what no other school could do. And Cheney wouldn't be around this long if it was doing things the wrong way for this long. So obviously they've done something right, and they've created the right kind of alumni and the right kind of support. And we just have to bolster that. We just have to look at it as what it is. It's Mother Cheney. And it's Mother HBCU. And we have to think about it that way.
You're absolutely right. We're going to let you go with our gratitude, but you got to give us your contact information one more time and then a promise that you'll come back in the not-too-distant future.
Absolutely. Whenever you have me. And again, my name is Jared Carter. You can find me, and I work at HBCUDigest.com. My email is carter@HBCUDigest.com, and our telephone number is 443-242-4228.
Cyberspace is a place that no army with artillery invades.
You've been listening to the Cyberspace Sanctuary, a safe house for your mind on the Blake Radio Network with Junius Ricardo Stanley. Thank you for logging on. We invite you to tune in again and engage in mental decolonization. Free your mind, the rest will follow.
That no corporation incorporates, no denomination faith dominates, and no court is going to try anything.